again, and welcome to Music Zone Sports, where great storytelling is what we do. Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bubka. And Bob, as we record this, it is Valentine's Day 2023. I know you are a great storyteller, and I'm sure you're telling Janice all the wonderful stories today of how deep your love is for her.
Well, it's amazing you say that, Kelly, because Janice and I had an interesting conversation over dinner last night. We kind of tallied it up. We've been together now 27 years. And when I say 27 years, that sounds like a lot. But when you plug in, that's 24/7. In other words, we have worked together. We've traveled together. We've vacationed together. We haven't done a thing apart in 27 years. And I'm glad you gave me this opportunity because publicly, I want to say Janice Self, our executive producer, and my love of my life, she is the best thing ever for me. I'd have been long gone trying my ways without her, support along the way. And we've had some wonderful memories. We've stayed in castles. We've visited countries. We've flown in helicopters. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Those are beautiful words. She is the glue to your life together, isn't she?
She absolutely is, and all you have to do is ask any member of my family. They'll tell you they're so appreciative of everything that she does, and it's been a good ride. We've had a lot of fun together. We consider ourselves very blessed. We've met so many wonderful people, yourself included. The likes of Herb Kohler and President George W. Bush, Bob Hope. I mean, the list goes on and on. Of people that we had access to because of our golf involvement.
Well, and it's wonderful stuff, and it is a great game and great business in so many ways. And speaking of having had a good ride, Dottie Pepper is our guest later today, Bob. She is really, really good as the leading on-course reporter for CBS Sports coverage of the PGA Tour. We haven't yet talked to her as we're taping this, but I know Dottie will have some great stories about her playing days and certainly the many miles she's walked on the golf course for CBS Sports.
Yeah, and it's amazing because I remember Dottie Pepper coming out onto the LPGA Tour. She was very shy. She was very reserved. She wanted no part of interviews or any kind of publicity. And as you accurately described, she has blossomed into a real superstar on the air. And the two things that she does, I pay close attention to everybody that's an on-course announcer because it's my business. But Dottie utilizes the two C's better than anybody in the industry, and that she knows when to contribute and she knows when to compliment. And boy, when you put that combination together, you have a superstar, and that's what they have in Dottie Pepper.
I agree, and she's built a lot of trust with the listeners and viewers on CBS Sports because of her playing background and her ability, yes, to communicate exactly what's going on, and also from her perspective, the upcoming shot, what might she might see happening, what might be in the player's mind. And boy, that's invaluable to the fans back home watching. And she's going to be up close this week as Tiger Woods returns to the PGA Tour at the Genesis Invitational at Riviera Country Club outside of Los Angeles. This will be Tiger's first event, first playing of any kind, really, in a competitive situation on a tour since the Open Championship in July at St. Andrews. Bob, first of all, what are you? Any expectations that you might have for your friend Mr. Woods this week?
Well, it's so hard to tell. He may feel well at home. He may be able to practice real well. But Tiger is a different breed of cat. I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, anything that you could anticipate from anybody else, you got to discard that when you're talking about Tiger. One of the contributions, ironically enough, that Tiger Woods has brought to professional golf, he is the creator of the 18th hole interview. When Tiger was in his heyday, he suddenly realized, why the heck do I want to walk up all the way up to that media room? Let's do it right here behind the green. And other players observed, and then when they reached a certain status, they'd say, I'll do the interview, but I don't want to do it in the media room. behind the 18th green. And now more interviews are conducted behind the 18th green at professional golf tournaments than they are in media rooms. I mean, it's remarkable, and it all goes back to the one and only Tiger Woods.
Yeah, as we refer to it, the quick quote area, as you're exactly as they come out from the official scoring where they sign their scorecards and so forth. You know, you talk about his heyday. I was lucky enough to moderate press conferences during the week of the PGA Championship and then the two Ryder Cups held in the United States during my years with the PGA of America between 2006 and 2014, and I felt pretty much at ease starting that. I didn't really have any issues knowing, even though I knew it was an international audience that was watching it, Golf Channel in the United States, I felt comfortable sitting next to Phil and players of that ilk. But I will tell you that when it a 30-minute Tiger Woods press conference for the very first one I ever did in August of 2006 at Medina Country Club, man, when he's on, when he walks in that jam-packed media room, and it is jam-packed as opposed to any other, and he's I think a lot of times people have said, oh, he doesn't have anything to say and so forth. Well, he's heard the same questions many, many times. I thought he was very accommodating all the times I was around him, but I will never forget that first one in terms of the rapid-fire questions and the need to really, for me as a moderator, to be on my game and knowing that the words he's going to be saying are going to be parsed by, you know, media members, et cetera. People wanted to hear what he had to say. And in fact, in 2006, he won the PGA Championship at Medina. 2007, he won the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. So maybe, in a way, I was a good luck charm for him, Bob.
Well, Kelly, with that Irish name like that, I think maybe you could be. It was fascinating, though. The interview room with any other player, the player would get up to the podium, sit alongside of you, and then the media would flock in. Well, when the notification comes out that Tiger's coming in, the media room's full before he even comes in. He wouldn't go into a media room unless it was jam-packed to capacity. So, you know, he's a different breed in so many ways. And, you know, his talent and ability to play the sport still amazes me. I mean, I got a kick out of a couple of times that I was able to say things to him that brought a chuckle. I remember when he won at Firestone, and it was basically pitch dark. And I was doing the post-round interview, and I said, boy, Tiger, you know this course so well, you can play it in the dark. I mean, he couldn't stop from laughing.
Right.
Another time we were at St. Andrews, and I said, can I get something? He says, let's walk and talk. Well, he's walking, and I got to jump these three-foot fences, and it was quite a spectacle, but he got a kick out of that. He loved to test me and you know, see if he could get something different. And the one that I always remember, World Golf Championships down in Argentina, David Duval, Tiger Woods, teammates, and all of a sudden, I thought I was going to be, you know, unique. And I said, I'm going to ask you guys something. I want you both to tell me, because you've been asked everything in the world. I want you to tell me what you know about underwater hockey. And I'll never forget David Duval's response. He said, what do? Melt the ice? Well, in essence, underwater hockey happens to be a gigantic sport, especially in Argentina and other parts of the world. And I've had many people look that up, underwater hockey, and they come back completely surprised the magnitude and the world championships that they have participating in underwater hockey. But I think that was the first and only time that somebody was able to get a question to David Duval and Tiger Woods they had never heard before.
Yeah, underwater hockey, Tiger Woods, and Bob Bupka in the same sentence. That is something. Hey, you've really had a nice relationship, a nice friendship, at least professionally with him. And at times, certainly in his at the peak of his stardom, he was a bit standoffish. A lot of media members, you know, didn't get along with him, etc. Why do you think you had a good and have had a good relationship with him?
Because I was there from the get-go. First time that I really interviewed Tiger, playing in San Antonio he finished his round. The 18th green is way down low, and the clubhouse is way up on top of the hill. And he gets in a cart there, and I said, Tiger, can I get a minute? He says, yeah, I'll meet you on top. So he's riding that cart. I'm sprinting up this mountain. When we get up there, he said, what do you want, Bob? I said, I don't have any energy left. Thanks anyway, Tiger.
But you did spend, you talked with him quite a bit after a round, or were able to get some words in that perhaps others didn't, right?
Well, I was very lucky in contributing to that. He really did like Janice, who we mentioned earlier in the show, our executive producer. There was an affection there between Janice and Tiger, and I think a lot of considerations that were directed my way through Tiger were directly attributable to the relationship that Janice had with him. And I knew his mom. I knew his dad. I had been at every major that he won. You know, there was nobody else out there that had the extensive background with Tiger that I had.
Tell me a little bit, if you would, about Earl Woods. I never met him personally. You did. You got to know him some. What was he like to be around?
He was unique. I'm going to leave it at that. He was, he fascinated me on so many fronts. I mean, he was firmly convinced that his son was going to be the best golfer that ever lived. I mean, that is a belief in an offspring that, you know, many parents have that, and they say, well, my son's going to be a superstar, my daughter's going to be a big-time player. I mean, but to be 1,000% convinced that he's going to be the best player that ever lived for years as Tiger ascended to that lofty perch, I kept saying, Earl, I got to give you credit. You were the first to educate me. When you told me early on, keep an eye on my son Tiger, he's going to be the best.
He was right. Certainly, you know, it's debatable whether he's the best all time or Jack, but what he's accomplished in his career is you know, it's remarkable, it's historical, et cetera. Hey, Bob, by the way, this will be the third what are called elevated events on the PGA Tour since the Tournament of Champions at the start. So again, you're going to have a big time field that Tiger's going to be contending with at the Riviera.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the one thing about Tiger that I don't think gets mentioned enough, he has raised millions of dollars for his foundation and helping out underprivileged kids in and around the Los Angeles area. Now it's basically around the world. I had the pleasure of going to the institution that he created out there. I mean, Tiger really loves kids, and he has been a godsend to so many.
Yeah, so the Genesis Invitational, indeed, the proceeds from that go to support the Tiger Woods Foundation and all the work that's done out in the Los Angeles area. Tiger was having a press conference today. I want to know, you know, Tiger, what are your thoughts coming back here to Riviera? You know, Tiger, what are your thoughts on teeing it up again after such a lengthy delay?
The plan was to play. Whether or not this body would listen to me or not was the main question. So I can hit golf balls and do all that stuff. It's a matter of whether I have the endurance in my leg. And we've been pushing it pretty good and been able to recover each and every day, which is great. So I'm excited about to be able to compete and play here at Riviera, where basically it all started. So I'm excited to get out there and play. And
I think people are going to be excited to hear him talk. And certainly the crowds are going to be tremendously larger, Bob, at Riviera Country Club than they would have been otherwise.
See, I'd be interested in one other thing. Tiger, are you going to be driving yourself back and forth to this golf tournament? Because this is the event. Yeah. He had that horrific accident. And I bet he's still a little gun shy. I'd be willing to bet a lot of money Tiger's not driving that car this week.
I would certainly hope you are correct, because we want to be able to get him back and forth safely. And it would be nice to see him make the cut and play the four rounds. I'm sure that he's appearing because he believes he can be competitive. I don't think he's going to go there just to show up. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be a lot of fun to hear from Dottie Pepper. Really have admired, like you have, the work that she's done on CBS Sports. Dottie was a member and independent director on the PGA of America's board of directors when I was there. For her contributions really go well beyond just the playing and reporting on the game. She's really invested in the game and has a great fondness for PGA professionals. And my dad, being a past president of the PGA of America, I can certainly relate to that. We will hear from Dottie Pepper right after this from our friends at Titleist.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elbin and Bob Bupka with you. Bob, our guest today, has been a winner in the game of golf no matter where she's been involved. She won two major championships and 17 times overall on the LPGA Tour. She served with distinction as an independent director on the PGA of America's board of directors, and she's authored a lovely book that pays tribute to the PGA professional who helped shape her life and her career. Yet you'd likely know her best as the leading walking reporter for CBS Sports coverage of the PGA Tour. We're delighted to welcome Dottie Pepper to Musings on Sports. Dottie, how are you?
I'm great, and thank you both for having me. It's good to hear your voices.
You know, Dottie, when I first met you a long time ago, you weren't that big a fan of the microphone. You'd rather be by yourself and let your golf do your talking, and it was my job to get you to open up a little bit. Little did I know that you would blossom into one of the all-time greats doing golf on TV.
As Steve Melnick said, I've come to terms with my shyness. So I guess as much as it pains me to say he's right, I guess he's right.
Are you still inherently shy?
I wouldn't say I like to put myself in a wide open theater by choice.
You know, the two things that you do very well, Dottie, and I was paying close attention over the weekend because I knew we were going to be honored to have you as our guest. You handle, as I put it, the two C's very well when you're broadcasting. You know when to contribute, and you know when to compliment. And boy, oh boy, that makes for wonderful coverage.
Well, thank you. It's fortunately, in my position, I get to compliment a lot right now, because if you're with the last group, you generally get to see a lot of good golf shots. Now, there are some weekends that it doesn't turn out like that, but in general, you do see a lot of good golf. And I think best broadcasters make their comments additive to what's going on. That's just not filling the airspace because it's their turn to talk. Sometimes the particular pictures are so good, it's almost doing them injustice to speak too much. And I hope I'm mindful of that.
Well, you certainly are. And just a few minutes ago, I was getting excited about the opportunity to be able to speak to you. And one thing popped into my mind, and I'm not sure that enough recognition is paid to Karsten and Louise Solheim as far as the LPGA Tour. You had to know them very well, and their contribution, in my eyes, has been astronomical.
No question about it. Karsten and Louise had a stable of players and product support when things were pretty thin with a lot of other manufacturers. They supported the event, sponsored the event in Phoenix on the LPGA Tour, going back to the Moon Valley days and beyond that. And then, of course, the Solheim Cup came to be in 1990, and they've continued to be just great supporters of the women's game, whether it's on the LPGA level and even in the amateur space. They're really supportive of college golf.
They were special people too, weren't they?
Absolutely. They were spiritual, not afraid to share that, and just live their life in an amazing manner, and they've passed that along to their kids.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of going over to Alan's house, Carson's mm-hmm. son, and I was sitting in the living room, and Alan asked me if I wanted anything to drink, and I said, yeah, I'll have a Coke, and 2 minutes later, I'm sitting on the couch in his room by myself, admiring what a nice room it was, and a little miniature horse walks by me. He's a fond collector of miniature horses.
That's funny. I had no
idea. Did you get the Coke also?
The only time it ever happened in my life, sitting at somebody's house, a horse comes by.
He also was one of the first, what was the people mover that they used to have through the airports and all that?
Sure.
It was almost like a unicycle. He had one of the very first ones of those. And I remember being at the facility, and he was flying all around on that thing.
Yeah. I was at the facility, and we were at the ball manufacturing segment. And I picked up a ball out of the rack, and I'm having it in my hand. And all of a sudden, Carson says, put that back, Bob. They were all being accounted for.
They're all accounted for, exactly. Yeah. So Carson Start was, as an engineer, in and around where I grew up in Schenectady, New York. It was like 30 minutes from where I grew up. So he also, he was legendary, not just for what he had done in the golf business, but how he had worked for GE, and that's where he started developing the ping putter.
Yeah, man, I heard the story from him. I said, how did you ever call it a ping? He says, well, after I finished constructing it, I got a group of people together, and I said, I want to show you something. He put a golf ball down, and he stroked it, and the thing went ping, and he said,
that's
a great name for it.
Hey, Dottie, as we conduct this interview, and we touched on it a little bit before we came on the air, you've just finished covering another crazy WM. By the way, I wish it would just be called Waste Management, but WM
I'm
Phoenix
with
Open.
You. Yeah, I'm with
I
mean, you there.
I don't get the acronym, but whatever. I would imagine you've got a fun story from over the weekend, if not one maybe beyond that, of all the years that you've covered what is easily the tour's unique event.
Yeah, I think it is very unique, and I think that people it's important to separate Friday afternoon, Saturday and Sunday, because it is total chaos out there on Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday it's just a lot of people celebrating the game of golf. Sunday is one of my favorite days of the year on the PGA Tour because there's so many people, and they're out there having a great time, but it's about the competition. It's not about the big party that Friday afternoon and Saturday are. Sunday's a great day in golf. But I think it's one of those weeks that you really have to manage your time well, because it just takes a lot of time to get that amount of people around. And if you're in a compound in the middle of the property, you need to pad your schedule a lot. It's just to get in and out of there and just embrace it. So I think that's the thing that people sometimes think, well, there's just a lot of people. But how do you get them in and get them out in the traffic pattern and just, well, waste management? And I think it's really amazing that you think about how long it takes to put those structures up, and then how all of it starts to come down as soon as the last putt's holed. It's really an amazing feat what they do. And all of those structures have to be approved for a certain number of people and certain winds and all of it. It's really an engineering and logistical feat what they pull off there.
Hey, you mentioned also about, you used the word embrace, and I would imagine from the standpoint of players, everyone has different personalities. Dottie, some players, I guess, embrace the craziness. There's got to be some players who are kind of, who are playing in the event, but are also like, man, I just wish it would be quiet. I kind of wish I could get back to the normal golf sound.
I think you could make a case for that for Patrick Cantlay. He's the one of the guys, although he came within a playoff of winning in 22, mm-hmm. I don't, it's just one of those things that I see Patrick Cantlay thriving in a situation where like Riviera, which is a smaller space and there's more, you know, just kind of a reverence of golf history at Riviera than in the party atmosphere of Scottsdale. And I think it is, it's not for everybody, but it's also been pretty much made for everybody now because of the designated events. So you do need to have a little shift in how you look at that week.
Yeah. And I how's that? This will be the third. Genesis will be the third designated event.
Right.
Is obviously this is a big change on the PGA Tour calendar. Are you in favor of it? Do you think it's the right thing to do to designate these events to get the top players in?
I think we're still figuring all of that out. I think it's all still playing out. But I do think it's what we all want to see is the best players playing against the best players more times. And it's why the majors are an easy highlight on schedules. Well, now they've just made it easier to highlight where the best players are going to be in. And I think it's going to end up, like, again, we're still figuring this out. And we don't know what the designated events will look like for 24. There's talk that there will be different ones as you move through the calendars year to year to year. But I think the theory of it is right on point.
Hey, Kelly, Dottie's dad was quite an athlete.
Yeah, your dad was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Dottie?
My dad was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in March of 1968 as one of the best prospects coming into the majors. He and let me see if I can remember all of these names. The one is easy because it's Johnny Bench, Alan Foster, Cisco Carlos, and Mike Torres. Boom, I got it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, and one of those psychedelic painted carts from, you know, the late 60s, a three wheeler. So it was just a single wheel out front.
Sure. Yeah,
pretty cool. But we always, being a very competitive family, I told my dad, you know, you may have gotten the cover of Sports Illustrated, but I had the byline for a while because I was writing for them. So there's
Did you do articles for Sports Illustrated?
I did. I had an op-ed space with them for close to, I think, almost 3 years. I wrote for them.
Multi-talented lady, two-time major champion, joining us on Musings on Sports. Dottie, what moments stand out for you at your years at Furman University, where you are a three-time All-American?
Wow. Well, being panicked that I was going to fail out because I went in on academic probation and ended up graduating on time with a 3-0. So I think there was some agita early. I think the national championship, we had a team of four seniors and a sophomore, and national championship was on graduation day, and we lost by one shot to San Jose State. We had this small little liberal arts school in the upstate of South Carolina, and we came within a shot of winning the national championship. And those four of us, we graduated that afternoon, or graduation was that afternoon. All of our parents went, but when we got back into town the next day, the president in his office had a graduation ceremony just for the four of us. It was pretty special.
Speaking of very special, Dottie, how do you compare winning the Nabisco Dinosaur twice to playing for six U.S. Solheim Cup teams?
It felt very, very different because, I had won... I played on a Solheim Cup team before winning the first Dyna for me in 92. But to be able to do something as a first timer, I think will always stand out. And that's what that first Solheim Cup team was. But winning your first major is certainly super special too. But it's also, there's a lot of, I think, expectation that comes after it and an adjustment with that expectation, because now I've won a major championship. I'm never going to hit a bad golf shot again in my life. And that is so not true. And I think you have to then manage that sort of thing. So I think there's constantly a learning process going on, but any chance you get a chance to be the first to do something and be a part of something that's the first time around is beyond special. And that's what that 90 season was.
Well, you went from a championship golfer to a superstar behind the microphone. Anybody that you'd like to give credit for mentoring you along the way?
Always Judy Rankin is at the top of my list. I got a chance to spend some time with her last week. Talked to her yesterday, actually, for a while. And it's just a constant reminder of how you say, as she always said, say the most you can in as few words as possible. And one of the other things that she always continues to pass along is, you know, you have so much good information that you've collected and conversations with people and little nuggets that you can get into a show, to, as I mentioned earlier, to be additive. But her, one of her things she reminds herself of and has reminded me of is there's really nothing worse than a good nugget at a bad time. So you might have to sit on that nugget. It might never see air. It's just something you have in your back pocket. But there's a good time or a right time for all of that information. And sometimes you feel like, golly, I really wanted to share that, but the time isn't right. But I made the show better by just not jamming in there.
You know, one guideline that I had always used in broadcasting, I always felt that less was more. In other words, you can overtell a story, and that's worse than not telling that story at all.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot of that is because people feel like this is a speaking role, when in fact, great announcers are really the best listeners and be able to take the information that they have and pick through the layers of a show and figure out where it best fits.
Very well said.
Dottie Pepper joining us on Musings on Sports. Hey, Dottie, we had Ian Eagle from CBS Sports, who does a great job with the NFL.
Amazing.
He's going to take, he's going to take Jim Nance's place after Jim retires from doing the Final Four going into after this year. And we talked with him about how he goes about prepping for an NFL game. It was fascinating. How about from your standpoint, as you go from, literally you're going from one tour event to another, what's it like? So today, as we tape this, it's Tuesday. What's the Wednesday like for a typical week for you on tour and then the Thursday through Sunday?
So my situation where I primarily work just weekends for CBS, I only do a couple of Thursday, Fridays, and those are for ESPN at the Masters and the PGA Championship. My travel day is Monday to get home. Tuesday is laundry. Tuesday and Wednesday are kind of my weekend. So it's laundry and garden and everything, the dog, everything about home life is Tuesday and Wednesday. But Wednesday I start really sort of onboarding information again. So I get all of the subscriptions to all the golf publications. We have a subscription service now through CBS that sends us everything that's put out. It's sort of a grab from across the country, and it's based in Venice, Florida. That comes in daily. So you start just reading all the articles. I have a guy that works at CBS, who's a statistician, that sends me, kind of grabs a lot of things off social media. So it becomes a clearinghouse that I can read them throughout the day. And by Thursday, I've really started to print a lot of things, the field, kind of gathering that information. So when I sit down and make appointment television to watch the show on Thursday, my brain kicks into golf gear again. So I've shut things down for Tuesday and Wednesday pretty much. Thursday, it starts to really gear up. I've done laundry. I start to repack on Thursday afternoon and evening. And I'm usually on the first flight of the day on Friday to get to the tournament site to see if there are any changes to the golf course on Friday, watch the show on Friday, and then get back out to the golf course again on Saturday, somewhere around a Zoom call that we have, depending on where we are. It's either at 7 a.m. Pacific time or whatever that might be. So that would be a 10 o'clock Zoom call if we're on the East Coast on the air at 3. So the Zoom call is generally 5 hours before we go on the air. So everybody that is in the trucks for CBS Sports, all of the announcers are all on that call and can start building graphic ideas, talk about what's happened over the next couple of days, what the commercial obligations are for the shows coming up, and really just get everybody literally on the same page as these pages get built out for the show.
And I would imagine under Seller Shy direction as your lead producer, You've had some really seemingly well-received new wrinkles this year with the on-course interviews with Max Homa and who was Keith?
Keith Mitchell did Pebble.
Keith Mitchell. How has that been received from a standpoint of what you guys do? Is that a fun thing from a broadcaster to have some new ideas, some new ways to approach a broadcast, the exacta ball you've introduced, kind of some new things? I would imagine that's fun.
It is fun. The fly cam last week at the 16th at Phoenix, it's been terrific. We had Tom Kim. So you get to really pick the brains about the just the shot making, what the club selection, setting the scene for the shot. You learn the interaction when a caddy pulls a player off, which happened with Keith Mitchell, and then when Joe Skavron like almost physically took the club out of Tom Kim's hand last week. That is too much. So I think you understand that bit of dynamic better. You understood what Max Homa was talking about. You got a little sense of a flip of his humor about not touching that golf ball when the official came over in San Diego. So I think you get a little more insight into the personality of these guys. And this is all because of technology. This is because you can literally, you go down the range now and all the guys have an ear pod in their ear or earbud. So if we can get the ability to talk to these guys through an earbud, that simple, something that they do all the time, then it becomes something that we can share pretty easily. The technology is that good right now. So we're trying to really use what's available and do it in a respectful but exciting manner. And it's been really cool. And the Atlas camera, I mean, that depth of field camera has been used in movies for eons. Now we're able to use it in sports, and it has added so much.
Daddy, you work alongside Jim Nantz. When I think of that, I think that's like being an altar boy with the Pope saying the mass. He is, what you get over the air is fantastic from Jim Nantz. But, Jim Nantz, the person, is equally as great as the on-air personality.
Yeah, he's extremely welcoming to his to his colleagues on the air. He's very, very supportive. But he has this amazing ability, and I would say Mike Tirico does the same. They have so much ability to unload information and then flush it and keep it relevant for this week, putting a 30,000 foot perspective on their sport, be able to put the punctuation mark at the end of the day, at the end of the competition, and then flush it and move on. It's really their brains, I think, are wired a little differently than most people.
You got to tell us about Rupert, because as I understand it, he has a better PGA Tour credential than you. Who is Rupert?
So Rupert is our almost 2.5-year-old miniature German Schnauzer. And I jokingly asked John Friedman at the PGA Tour, I said, hey, how do I get a credential for Rupert? And it showed up 24 hours later with better access than I have. You can go and play your dining and hospitality.
That's awesome.
And so I thought for sure, I said, well, you don't want me posting anything about this, do you? And he said, no, I want you to post it everywhere you can. So he was with us at Pebble that whole week. He went on the golf course. He went to all the shots you would want to be seen around at Pebble. And there's a great dynamic between golf and people with dogs. He said, no, really, tag us in everything and put dogs on golf course, whatever it might be that you can hashtag and create a sense of synchronicity between all of us. Please do it. I was shocked.
Well, I no longer want to be Jim Nantz. I want to be Rupert.
I want to be Rupert.
Rupert's got the life, right? And
he
the credentials.
He does have the life. And the credentials to back it up. Exactly.
Hey, we're wrapping it up with Dottie Pepper. Hey, Dottie, I got to know you and was very fortunate to be able to do so during my time with the PGA of America when you served on the independent director on the board of directors. Two-part question. Why? Why did you make that decision to sort of give back to the game that way? And also, please talk about the book that you wrote called Letters to a Future Champion, My Time with Mr. Pulver, which is all about the relationship you had with a PGA professional who really mentored you as a young person and obviously helped shape your life and your career.
Well, that's really, that's actually two questions, and I can answer it really in one answer, because it was the end of 2012. It was becoming apparent that the model at NBC Golf Channel was not, wasn't a great one for me to be on the road that much. And it was just, it was more than I wanted to be on the road. And as much as I loved talking about golf, it was just not going to be a healthy space. So stepped away, and the opportunity came to, serve on the PGA of America's board. And to me, it was the perfect chance to say thank you to what my PGA professional, George Pulver, who was the subject of the book, the letters that he wrote me throughout our time as student and mentor, professional and this little girl with big dreams. It was my chance to be able to say thank you to him, not only serving those 3 years, which taught me so much on the board, but also to take it to that next level and be able to put the book together that I began during the COVID lockdowns. And it's been a project that I'm so thankful I had the opportunity to do that and kept those letters from him. And I've been able to really share the magic that he passed along to me from mentors that he'd had in the past, going back to to Seymour Dunn, working at the Lake Placid Club in upstate New York, and going back really to the roots of the game, even back to the beginnings of the game in Scotland.
Were there a couple of messages that he kept coming back to in the many letters that he wrote to you in terms of what you were trying to accomplish as a player and beyond, in terms of growing up as a, you know, a woman who would give back to the game in some way?
One of the first things he always was made me try to be aware of is preparation and being prepared for anything that Mother Nature or a golf course or the competition might throw at you. There's a couple of letters that he, and most of them are typewritten, but there are a couple scratchings in the margins say, do you have a good umbrella? Have you packed extra towels? I mean, are there backup gloves? Those are those things that as a youngster that they set a foundation for even what I do now, because my rain suit's always in the bag. There are certain things that came from that letter that always go into how I pack and prepare to go on the road now every day, that every week that we're on CBS. So it was preparation. It was also being curious, not being afraid to ask questions of other players and other teachers, but also to constantly be coming back to the fundamentals of the game, a good grip, a good setup, and just staying in a game, staying in a match, because as he always said, you never know when success might dart at you. So it's never giving up.
Well, we don't want to give up on you, but our time is running out. But I have to ask you, where can our listeners buy a copy of this fabulous book?
You can go to my website at dottiepepper.net. And on there, it's the paper book itself, but it's also in audio form. And that's on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. Anywhere you buy audiobooks, you can also grab that. But I do have small independent bookstores in and around Albany, New York, like the North Shire, where I'm trying to think where else these small indies are, in Albany at the Open Book, and also in Schenectady, New York on J Street. So there are places, the independent bookstores, but to get a personalized copy, you can go directly to dottiepepper.net, and I fill the orders and get them straight to you.
Hey, Dottie, before we let you go, Tiger Woods returns this week. Interest will be even more ramped up at the Genesis, I would imagine, huh?
No doubt. You saw what happened. All he had to do was a two-line tweet, and it sent golf back right into the dizzy spectrum again. So he is still the needle. I'm really anxious to see how his body holds up. It's not the easiest walk at Riviera, but I think this is great when you get to see, he's the GOAT to me. We're living in a time, I just think we're living in such a special time in sports in general. When you look at Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, Mikaela Shiffrin, Tiger Woods. I mean, all of these players that we've gotten to watch at their peak in a variety of sports. Absolutely. On and on and on we go. How lucky are we?
Well, we were very lucky to have you as our guest on Musings on Sports. Dottie Pepper, thanks so much for walking down memory lane and looking ahead to this weekend and many more events on the PGA Tour and the major golf championships you're going to be covering.
Well, thanks. You guys talk, people think Jim Nantz has the greatest seat in the game. I think I actually do because I can smell it. I'm not stuck in a tower. I can feel it. I can smell it. I can hear it.
Thanks, Dottie.
Thanks, you guys.
Being number one is earned. And once again, the title is Pro V1 and Pro V1X have earned the trust of the overwhelming majority of players at every level and recorded the most wins across the worldwide professional tours and amateur events. This continued dominance is validation that performance matters when it matters most. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Bob and Kelly back. Bob, great hearing from Dottie Pepper. She, as I said before the interview started, she is multifaceted when it comes to the game. She's a great player in her career, terrific job on the course, and a real passion for caring about the game in general through her work with the PGA of America on an ongoing basis. She loves the game.
Well, that's all you can say about Dottie Pepper. She played the game with vim and vigor. She takes that assignment at CBS with that same vim and vigor, and I think that there's no doubt that listeners are the beneficiaries of getting to listen to Dottie Pepper. I enjoyed my time with her.
Yeah, me too. Thank you to Dottie for her time. Thank you all for listening to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elbin signing off for Bob Bupka. Talk to you next week on Musings on Sports.